Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit theupsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the bastards of Boston baseball.
Hello, everyone. The bastards are back for a midweek edition of the podcast. We're going to be kind of covering a lot of Red Sox starting pitching content in this episode. We'll also get into some rules that are being implemented into the minor leagues, which could end up being at the big league level next year, mostly pertaining to the shift. That's a huge topic on social media right now. Joining me for this show, Charlie Smith, Job Goddard. And you know what? I just realized something prior to you guys coming into the thing. We are the three most negative hosts on this podcast, and here we are.
Yes, we are.
Here we are.
Well, see, you know what's funny? What's funny is I almost feel like some are being negative by being too positive. Like, you're setting this team up for false hope. Like, don't do that. No, but jokes aside, like, I know I've been a super, super negative Nancy, but it was justified last year, and I was right. And people said, no, Charlie, no. The Red Sox aren't going to lose that many games. And I said, you're obviously not watching the games because they don't have a team. And I was right. So this year, it's a little bit better. But not by much.
Are they going to be better, Charlie?
They'll be a little bit better. They'll definitely win more games this year than they did last year. And they'll definitely lose more games this year than they lost last year. I'm still not sure what the percentage is going to be yet, though. Bold predictions. A lot will matter with what happens with Chris Sale, because if he does not come back this year either, I don't think we're going to win nearly as many games, obviously. It's an ether. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't really think that I'm a negative host, Terry. I think that just I contradict Andrew's blind optimism so well. You know, we have some differences of opinion on the talent of especially young players that come up to play for the Sox. I want to see you succeed at the big league level before I call you, you know, the next great insert Red Sox. I can't do it. And supposedly, you know, the most recent one is Bobby Dalbec. I know I'm down on Bobby Dalbec. Some people aren't. I don't think I'm a negative Red Sox fan. I think I'm just very realistic about what this team's expectations should be. And I'm not going to change that based on spring training at bats.
Yeah, I think we're realists, like what you were saying. And that's what makes us different from all the other run-of-the-mill Red Sox podcasts. And, I mean, we could be like Carrabas and company and just come up with stupid slogans and whatnot. But we keep it real. So that's what our audience gets, and we're never going to stray from that. And there's going to be debates, and we're going to hold each other accountable, whether it's us three other hosts, whatever. We're going to hold each other accountable. And you got to be honest. And if you're wrong, we'll have to own it. And if we win 97,
I want to be wrong.
If we win 97 games this year, Job and I are going to be apologizing up and down. Charlie, too. You know, the whole month of September.
I'll be the happiest
person
to ever be wrong.
I'll be super happy to be wrong. I know I'm not going to be wrong. So,
yeah.
I'm just not worried about this. Like, I'm just not. Sorry.
The one thing I go back to is in the 2015 into 2016 offseason, I spent that whole winter. The theme of my Twitter account was trashing the Rick Porcello contract, which we had already seen a year of by that point. And then the mofo won a Cy Young. So, like, I would have bet literally anything on that.
Did you feel stupid?
So you're telling me Garrett Richards has a chance at the Cy Young? That's what you're telling me right now?
I'm saying there's a chance.
Shame on you. Shame on you for even considering that. That's slander. I am
anti-Garrett Richards. I hope the listeners know that already. But,
I am too.
Terry, I loved your most recent episode that you did, just you, on what the three things the Red Sox need to do to make playoffs in 2021. One of those things kind of started to happen for me today, so I'm very excited to talk about today's game.
Yes, absolutely. So let's kind of get into that, because one starting pitcher who has kind of piqued a lot of people's interest, Eduardo Rodriguez, coming back again from a bout with myocarditis, which was an after effect of his COVID-19. That's a heart ailment. Very healthy. And one of the things that was healthy today was his strikeouts. Six of them. He was like the power company, turning people's lights out. So no walks as well. I love that. When a starting pitcher goes out there, doesn't give up a walk, usually all the other stats on the stat line are pretty good. And he was stretched out to four innings today. 33 strikes and 48 pitches. So, Charlie, go ahead. What were your thoughts on Rodriguez?
I'm actually going to be the first one to say I was wrong. Last year, I had said that Erod is done for the year. He may not come back. Myocarditis is something that could end your career. And the risk that he ran was way too high last year, and I was wrong. I did not think he was going to come back firing all cylinders, and I'm going to give the man his due. He gave up. He made one mistake. Solo shot to someone who's still hitting, like, well below 200. Well, actually, now probably closer to 200. But he was phenomenal. He was absolutely phenomenal. Four innings, six strikeouts, as Terry mentioned, no walks. I think he gave – it was just a solo run. Outside of that, he gave up a couple other hits. And you already mentioned the strike numbers. I absolutely love what I saw today. I love it.
Job.
I think the best thing that I saw today was the fact that he was stretched out to four innings this early. I thought the one thing that I was really worried about, it wasn't necessarily his stuff or his fastball or anything like that. I thought they were going to have to slow walk him because of the injury. You know, heart conditions, no joke. So I thought maybe the first time that we were going to see him pitch four innings was going to be, you know, the day before opening day, or, you know, in his last start of the spring. And before that, they were going to slow walk him with maybe an inning, two innings. So it was great to see him out there. And it was great to see him not lose velocity or lose control as he got tired. You know, he was dominant throughout. In fact, his mistake came early in his start. He only seemed to get better, which was, to me, the most encouraging part.
Absolutely. And at this point, he has to be the opening day starter. Nathan Eovaldi pitched a sim game, I think yesterday, for his second start, and personal reasons was cited for that. Not sure. I mean, you could go a million different ways with personal reasons, but so that's his second start. I don't know. I mean, who else could conceivably be the opening day starter? I don't think anybody. Nick Pivetta's pitched well, but I mean, why would he get it?
So I know it hasn't been announced yet, but it's Rodriguez. I think Coral will probably announce that next week. If I had to guess, he just didn't want to announce it before seeing what Erod had in the tank coming off the injury. But I wouldn't be surprised if you hear from Cora this week that he's the opening day starter and takes a little pressure off everybody else.
There's really nobody else that you can give it to. I mean, in real talk, you're not going to give it to Garrett Richards. He hasn't pitched well enough. Pivetta's done great, but Pivetta's not Erod. And here's the thing. I think it'd be a slap in the face to somebody like Eduardo Rodriguez if you didn't make him the starter, and yet you gave it to someone who was on the team last year, kinda. He only made a couple of starts. I think he ended up striking out like 15, 18 guys in three starts last year, two starts. I forget how many starts he had.
But I think he was barely three used. Starts. Yeah. Yeah, I think the only guy who may be able to challenge him for that role would be Eovaldi. And Eovaldi's not, well, I'm not even talking about Chris Sale. Yeah. I'm talking about Nathan Eovaldi, and he doesn't seem like he's going to be on track. You might be able to make the argument that he deserves it after pitching so well last season. He gave you five good innings every time out and then imploded in the sixth a couple of times. But I think that this is Erod's job if he's healthy, and he looks healthy to me. So
agreed.
I'm very excited for opening day. I think, you know, he's a clear number one on this staff right now. And hopefully he's a number one as far as his stuff goes compared to the rest of the league, because otherwise we're in trouble.
We've got 21 days until opening day. If we're pretending that it's Friday morning right now, when most people are going to be listening to this, what are the chances that in these 21 days, Eduardo Rodriguez gets a contract extension?
I think they're pretty low. I think Charlie disagrees with me just by the look on his face as I look at him here. But
oh no, I
think
I agree.
They're pretty low. I think the reason they're low is because of the injury, and just because the market. You know, it doesn't look like the Red Sox want to spend any additional money this season. That's why they're going cheap with almost every signing they make. You look at it and go, oh, well, that could work out. You know, there's very few guys that have proven it that they've signed who say, you say, okay, well, you can slot him into this spot or you can slot him into that spot. So I just don't see it, because it would either put us on the tax, you know, above the tax threshold this year or close to it. And I just don't think that they want to do that. And then as far as whether they might do it during the season, I would not be surprised. I don't think Eduardo Rodriguez is one of these guys who says at the start of the season, I'll talk about it after the season. I wouldn't be surprised if they get something done over the All-Star break if he's dealing.
Actually,
as
Joe,
long as they're willing to give him his contract.
I don't think it – we discussed this in the group chat, and Andrew kind of set the record straight. I don't think it would be applicable to this season. Like, he's already under contract. So
as long as it doesn't buy out his current contract, I mean, I could see it happening. I wouldn't be happy if they did. I'd be one of the few, I think, that would not be happy. And the more I see him pitch, the more I'm going to probably regret saying that. Because I'd like to see him on this team next year if he's pitching the way that he pitched today. But again, heart condition, I want to see him pitch three or four starts before I even consider that. So we'll see.
I want to see him pitch a season. I really do want to see him pitch a season. And here's the thing. If they were to give Eduardo Rodriguez a big deal now, this is completely changing the tune from everything you've been doing for the last year and a half. You're not giving anyone extensions. You're not giving anyone any deals. You're being real short on the money for every single player. Now, if we're intentionally not signing people or offering proper contracts, and I like to call it a proper contract, some of them have been stupid, to save it for only Eduardo Rodriguez, someone who had myocarditis, who we still don't know. Granted, two spring training starts, these are meaningless games with somebody that will not be on the major league roster. It would just blow my mind. He's under contract right now. As far as arbitration goes, how many more years do we have on that with him?
None.
One?
None. No.
This is it.
This is his
walk
here.
Okay, this is it.
Yeah.
Okay. We still don't know the state of the future either. Are we going to have a strike? We don't know. So, it would shock me to see Eduardo Rodriguez get a big contract extension or contract extension in what we think, in the realm of what we think he'll get. Like, he's going to probably command minimum 15 to 20 a year, and the Red Sox aren't going to do that right now. You just don't know what you're paying for. You just don't know.
If you were to sign him right now, I think we disagreed with this on a couple of shows ago. I think it was Job, Andrew, and I for that show. I really think you could get him for about what Jake Odorizzi just got, which is roughly 3 years, you know, 40 to 45 million. So that'd be about 14 to 15 million a season.
I think he's going to command more, though, Terry.
I think he's going to need 5 years at 96 to 100 million.
He's going to ask for 15 to 20 a year.
Okay, now
I think he's a lefty hitting the market at
he's a lefty, exactly. Yes.
And there's not that many. Next season's got a very thin pitching market. I know we say that every year, but next season's got a thin pitching market, a very heavy hitters market. He's going to get maybe $18 million a year.
He's going to get more than Odo.
Now we can pay him that next year. He's a better pitcher than Odo. And he's
yes. And he's a lefty, exactly.
Yeah,
who would you rather have on your team, Jake Odorizzi or Eduardo Rodriguez?
I
think it's close, but only right now because of this season. I think for the next 5 years, if you're deciding between the two, you take Eduardo Rodriguez 31 times out of 30.
Erod's younger, exactly, so that's the selling point, is he's younger.
He's 29 years old. I mean, yeah. he's not one of these guys going into free agency at 32 years old. He's 29 years old, and this is going to be his big payday. He hasn't had one yet. This is it.
Right.
So he's going to go in there and ask for $100 million.
The market next season isn't quite as thin as you think. It's kind of a wonky market because there's going to be a lot of short-term signings. Zach Greinke, age 38. Justin Verlander, age 39. Max Scherzer, age 37. Charlie Morton, age 38. Those guys.
How many of those guys are going to walk away? I think you might see the end of Verlander. You might not see Greinke again, depending on what he has in the tank this year.
You also listed a bunch of right-handed pitchers. Morton.
And you just they're listed all right. they're a all bunch of great pitchers who are right-handers and who are old.
Well, we got
Eduardo Rodriguez you can count on for 30 starts.
We got two lefties already next year in Chris Sale, Tanner Houck. And then you've got Nathan Eovaldi, Nick Pivetta. So those are the four that are definitely going to be in the rotation. Now, I just listed four old guys. You also have Noah Syndergaard, age 29, Marcus Stroman, who Charlie and I definitely don't want, age 31, Lance McCullers, age 28. There are some other ones. Corey Kluber's on that list.
So I would say he's probably compared to McCullers. As far as his contract goes, he's probably going to be comparable to Lance McCullers Jr. Other guys on the list, I think Syndergaard's obviously going to lead the market. But some of those other guys, I think
he can't stay healthy.
They're not. Yeah, but talent is talent. People will bet on talent over injury history all day long.
Well, Syndergaard,
that's a very heavy that's a very heavy market for right-handers and for old guys.
Syndergaard will have
set for the next 5 years.
Syndergaard will have at least 2 months at the end of the season, plus maybe a postseason if the Mets are any good. We know what happens there usually.
I love that he laughed.
Yeah.
I love that.
Right. And
it was involuntary too, is the best part.
So I would just take Syndergaard at face value based on what he does this year with a fully rebuilt elbow. But it's a wonky market next year. And I just feel like if you get the Erod deal done now, you're probably getting it at a discount. If you wait a year and he pitches well, you're getting him probably at a little bit more of a premium. But let me just, whether we agree on it or disagree, let me just point this out. If a deal doesn't get done, and I think it's about 50-50 whether it does or it doesn't at this point. If a deal doesn't get done and he's pitching well, it's the elephant in the room for most of the season. Everybody's going to be talking about it. It's going to be a big topic. And then Chaim Bloom may make another very unpopular decision. We all agreed on the Benintendi trade, you know, being necessary. There was no crying on this podcast about it. We understood the Mookie trade, but there were factions of the fan base in both those instances that wanted to light Fenway Park on fire. And, you know, so people will probably be getting attached to Erod. So it's going to be an interesting, you know, I don't want to say development. You know, it's just going to be an interesting thing to watch as the season does unfold.
Well, so now there's two things you're talking about here, Terry, and I know Charlie and I probably see eye to eye on this one. One is that you just signed Chris Sale before you needed to, and he's already down with an injury. hopefully until August, if not out the whole season. So there's the out for the Red Sox if they don't want to sign Eduardo Rodriguez right now. It's, oh, we just did that and it was a mistake because Chris Sale's hurt. And they won't say that, but they can leak that to their guys in the media. And that's what we'll be hearing if they don't sign him and he starts dominating. They're going to say, well, it was a risk we didn't want to take because we just took one with Chris Sale. On the other end of the spectrum, I think if you do sign him, we're going to sit here and say, okay, well, he's not Chris Sale because he doesn't have elbow history issues. You know, he's also not built like Chris Sale, who's built like a twig, but he's also not as good as Chris Sale. So if you're going to pay him for 5 years, that would go kind of against the roster flexibility thing that Chaim Bloom is going against. I think the one thing that's going to dictate that this whole season about whether or not we sign him to an extension or even if we sign him in the offseason as a free agent is going to be how good Hauk is. If Hauk is a stud, then we can let Erod walk and the fan base is going to be okay with that. If Hauk sucks, then we're in trouble.
Well, one thing, though, he's not getting 5 years before the season starts. There's no way.
Oh, no.
No. He'll get a two-year deal if it's an extension. And I'd be okay with that.
Earlier we were saying how old he was. I'm not sure if I heard 29 or 27.
29.
He's 27.
Yeah, he'll be 28 going into his walk year.
Yeah. So he's 28. Okay. Odorizzi is turning 31 this month.
Right.
Erod turns 28 next month. So there's a 3-year gap between the two. And their numbers as far as like win totals, scary close. Erod has pitched 5 seasons. He's 51-31. Odorizzi has been in the league 9 years, 62-56. Now the strikeout numbers, Odo's got almost 1,000. Erod has 700. So you're talking about like a season and a half. Erod can crack 200. Odo,
what do you
can't.
Have for innings pitched?
He's got 699. He's averaging more than one strikeout per innings. He's got 699 for innings pitched, 707 strikeouts. Odorizzi has 1,042 career strikeouts, 995. So they're close. They're close.
So what I'm hearing from you, Charlie, is that if you're going to sign him to an extension, you're going to sign him to a very high AAV because he knows his value when he's 28 years old.
He's going to bet on
himself.
There's
not many guys hitting free agency like that. He'll bet on himself in free agency.
2 years ago, he won 19 games.
It's going to be big.
Devil's
20-game winner.
Devil's advocate. Scherzer's a stud this year at 37. Why pay Erod 3 when we can get Scherzer for 1? And you're Erod's agent, so how are you going to digest that?
Are you playing short-term baseball? Or are you planning for the future of your team? Who is going to be the future of your rotation in 3 years?
Probably
Tanner Houck, maybe.
Houck, maybe Mata, who, by the way, has...
We don't know yet.
A partial tear of his UCL. But... There's probably going to be one other kid from the farm. If we're talking 3 years from now, somebody else will emerge. So it'll be Hauk, one of those guys. Sale will be at the tail end. And there's going to be bigger free agents in future off seasons, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, that could be in play.
I think it's really – go ahead, Charlie.
I was going to say, don't you think the optics would look even worse if the Red Sox were to just let him go and didn't even try to sign him? I mean,
it's like Lester 2.0.
It's Lester 2.0. I was just thinking that. Like, I was just going to say, we let him, we traded him to the Athletics because we offered him a BS contract. And I wouldn't have signed that if I was him either. That was a slap in the face. Like, we thought he was going to take a home discount. That was like a discount. Like, it was way off what we thought and what everybody thought he was going to get paid. I don't blame any announcer. I don't blame anybody on the radio. I don't blame any fan for saying, yeah, you guys messed up on that one. I think the Red Sox would be messing up on Eduardo Rodriguez if they don't at least position or prepare themselves. Yes, we want to make an offer at this guy. Now, if a team comes out and says, yeah, we'll give you $5,125, the Red Sox are saying toodaloo. I know that. And so does Boston. You don't know what you're going to get for $25 million. You could do a lot more with $25 million. You could get Scherzer and somebody else for $25 million, because we don't know what he's going to want. I don't think Scherzer is going to command $25 million next year.
I think...
Charlie, I think you said it right. What do you think, Terry?
Well, the market is just so finicky next year. I just think if you're Erod's camp, you do want to get a deal done this year. before the season starts.
I think if I'm him, I want to bet on myself. If you're feeling healthy, you're going to bet on yourself because you're coming off an injury that you're probably not going to get your market value based on the fact that you didn't pitch last season. It's different. If he sat out and didn't get myocarditis, I think it's different. Then you probably take the extension. But the fact that he didn't pitch last season, you're probably, if I'm him, I'm betting on myself, especially the way that I've been pitching. You know, my last healthy season in 2019, I won 19 games. I was fantastic down the stretch, and I could be a leader on any stat. In 2 years' time, he's going to be 31. He'll be the leader on somebody's stat. This guy has the talent to be a number one. He just hasn't shown it yet.
With Erod, though, I think, much like Bogarts, I think he hates the idea of playing for another team. I think Boston is by far his first choice.
I think every time we say that, we're wrong. So even if I think that, I'm not going to say it. Because every time we say that, we get bitten in the ass. We thought that was John Lester.
Well, and I think
then John Lester went. Now he's a National. You know, he's been around a little bit. He's won World Series elsewhere. And if he went into the Hall of Fame, he'd probably go in as a Cub.
He's made comments, though.
He will go in as a Cub.
Positive that Erod's made comments wanting an extension. But I
wouldn't be opposed to offering him one, but I'm not going to offer him a big AAV.
Yeah, I think it's, like I said, I think the max deal right now is about 3 years, $45 million. And there is risk. We keep talking about, you know, his recovery from COVID, but Eovaldi comes off the books after next season. A bunch of other money comes off. I don't know. It's a very interesting situation. It's going to be a fluid situation for, you know, until it resolves. The only thing that will pour a bucket of cold water on it is if he goes out and then does get injured with no extension whatsoever being signed. Month of May, injury, not pitching well, what have you. So we'll just see how it develops, because there's so many scenarios as far as how this could play out. The other pitcher making headlines, hitting 98 miles an hour on the gun yesterday, Tanner Houck. And if 98 doesn't sound significant for anyone in the listening audience, he averaged 92.8 last season. So a lot more velo. I wanted to say juice there, but that could be taken the wrong way. What are our thoughts here? Because if he continues to pitch well in the remaining 3 weeks, I don't know how he gets sent to AAA.
I wish I could agree with you. I just don't see a spot for him on the rotation at the moment. And I know that they will not convert him to a bullpen arm just to get him into the big league, you know, games. So my assumption is he'll probably start in AAA. And he'll be the first man up with an injury. I just don't see room for him. We have too many arms in front of him, I think.
I'm either in the, it could go either way, or the past year plus, more on the negative side than on the positive side. I can admit that to myself and to the fans and to our listeners. What is our consensus for starting rotation? Erod. You have Eovaldi, you have Martin Perez, you have Pivetta, and then who is going to be number five?
Richards is in there for now.
Richards is number five. Houck does not have a spot right now. Right now. Do I think he will come into the rotation? Yes, I do. Why? Because I think Garrett Richards will do Garrett Richards. I think he will end up finding, we will find out that it was not right for the starting rotation. Tanner Houck will come up. He will be a mixed bag, a little bit of good, a little bit of bad. But I'd rather see a little bit of good and bad from someone who's still young than someone who's just not good. Like, I would just rather see that. And then Richards can be your long relief pitcher, your LRP. You're going to have one guy like your – I hate to compare this to him because he's one of my favorite baseball players of all time, not just on the Red Sox, but Tim Wakefield. He could do he could come in for a start. He'd come in for a 2-3 inning save. I don't think we're going to use him as a closer, but we can have him as a long reliever. I think that's what's going to end up happening. So I think Job is right in the sense that right now he doesn't fit into the rotation. Do I see it in the future? Yes, I do. Because you can't keep someone who throws almost 100 mile an hour gas at AAA. That's just silly. You're just not going to do that.
No, I agree with Charlie, and I think he's pitching to a level where if this was a little bit of a lighter, I would say, rotation, if there was one less arm, then he would be guaranteed a spot as the fifth arm at least, because he's earned it. But unfortunately, right now, I think Richards is going to get the start because Bloom won't admit that he's wrong that early. No GM ever does. And I would say Cora probably moves him into the bullpen in May because Richards is garbage and Hauk has been too good. I'd be very excited to see Hauk starting in the starting rotation.
I think you guys are correct at the moment. There isn't a place for him, but what gives me so much hesitation to fully commit to, yeah, he's definitely not going to be up, is the fact that he could be our second best pitcher right now behind Erod.
Yeah, I think he's got great potential. We haven't yet seen him stumble. I mean, he will stumble. Every rookie coming into the big leagues gets lit up at some point when the hitters start to figure him out. It'll be interesting to see kind of when that happens for us. I'd rather him start in AAA and kind of make sure that he's ready rather than throw him into the fire. Last season, we threw him into big league games, give him some experience, but there was no pressure. This season, the pressure's on. We can't have bottom finish in the AL East three straight years. And the fans are unforgiving in Boston if you come in and you suck. So I think I would rather him start in AAA and just make sure that he's 100% there. And I'd love to see him in May or June as, you know, the fifth starter in the rotation, if not the fourth starter.
Charlie?
Wait, Job, who are you talking about as the fourth starter?
Hauk.
Stop it. You're making me blush. I'm just happy to get him into the rotation. I mean, Richard's going down. So do you think that he and Pivetta would potentially switch? I mean, I don't want to shoot for the moon here and say that he's going to go into the four slot. I think assuming he can take the five spot, I would be happy.
I'm going to be realistic with myself. I think that if you're going to call him up, he'll probably start in the five spot. But the amount of injuries that we're going to have this season, we're always going to have injuries. He's the next man up. And so if he's already, I think, you know, if he's already up in May, then come June or July, if he gets a shot to move up in the rotation, I think he's ready to take it. Like Terry said, I think he could be the second or third best arm on this team. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if he gets a shot, he really takes the bull by the horns and turns himself into an everyday player in the major leagues.
I think what would be even more kind of just whoa would be if he stays in the five spot, you just see how you do all year, and then next year you assume the three spot and then blow everyone away. Because then it's not like a steady progression. It's just like, it's like the stock market, like GameStop. It just goes, shoots up, and then it just doesn't stop because it's just madness.
Well, so a lot of that depends on what you do with Eddie Rodriguez, right? So, Terry, I'm interested to see what you think, right? If you put him in the five spot and he succeeds all season, you let Eddie Rodriguez walk, he's your number two. Is he not? Unless Pivetta turns out to be, you know, Sale. A diamond in the rough.
Because the way I look at it, it's going to be Sale, Erod, potentially Hauk. Pivetta would be
four. You're going to go three lefties?
Well, Richards won't be back. Richards won't be back next year unless he pitches well, and at which point that's a great problem to have. But, you know, so there's going to be a spot next year, even with Rodriguez on the team, if he does, in fact, get an extension. But the interesting thing here is the propaganda is only going to build and build and build, and it's going to be a tougher and tougher decision for Bloom as you get closer to opening day. And if Richard sucks this whole time and just can't get the walk rate down, that's going to be a tough spot for Bloom on a lot of levels. And he's already not very popular amongst the fan base, Heim Bloom, and he's certainly not popular with the three of us specifically. So that's another situation that, you know, we're just, it's almost day by day. Let me throw one scenario into this. And Job, I think you've mentioned this in previous shows. I've basically had this sentiment since the start of the 2019 season as well. What if Richards is pitching okay, and you just put Evaldi in the pen to be your long guy? I know we got Andres.
You know, but I love Evaldi. I love Evaldi. I think that would be a good move if you really need a long guy. This bullpen has a lot of okay, not good arms. So you could make that move, and I wouldn't be so upset about it. But I think if you're going to put Evaldi in the bullpen, it's going to be in a levered situation. I don't want to waste him on cleanup duty or sixth and seventh inning when you're, you know, in a 4-2 ball game. I want him to be pitching with the bases loaded. I want him to be pitching the eighth inning, the ninth inning, because he has the strikeout ability that I think not only do teams covet, but I would covet in that situation. And he doesn't walk a lot of guys. I hate Matt Barnes because Matt Barnes walks guys.
His performance.
I just don't like walks.
His performance will dictate how he's used in the bullpen. But let me just be clear on why I'm motivated for this. He's not going to pitch 120 innings. He's going on.
No, he's not.
He's going on the disabled list. So if you put him in the pen, that keeps him under 120 anyway. And if somebody does get injured late in the season, then you stretch him back out to start, you know, in the month of August, September, and you take October as it comes, if it comes.
I can see Charlie's face. He really wants to say something about this. What do you got, Charlie?
I really think we need to take a moment and remember how much we're paying Evaldi. This is year 3 of 4 of a $68 million deal. That means that you guys want to have a $17 million bullpen arm.
If it makes the pieces fit, it's goofy. It is. Chapman's getting $17 million a year with the Yankees. Obviously, Evaldi isn't Chapman, but
thank you for clarifying that, because I almost reached through this television and choked your little neck. That just wasn't happening. I get what you're saying, and I get how you're saying make the pieces fit. So in your mind, you want to have a $17 million non-knuckleballing Tim Wakefield in the bullpen.
If you want,
that's what I'm hearing you guys say.
If you want Nathan Evaldi to pitch all 6 months, I think you have to find a way to reduce his innings, and that's the best way to do it.
That's just so hard, though. $17 million in the pen. He's going to be getting more than two starters in your rotation.
Yeah.
He's literally making 3 or 4 times your rotation salary.
Yeah.
Or 3 or 4 guys in your rotation. Because Richards is getting how much this year?
He's getting 10, but I mean, Houck's getting the major league minimum. Nick Pivetta, not much more than that, maybe $1 million.
Right, yeah. Right. And then Erod's making like a hair over 8 mil, right? Like, wasn't it like 8.1 or 8.4?
Erod is 8.
Erod was making like
8.4, yeah.
Okay, so 8.4 million. You got 10, so 20 million for 4 starters, and you have Evaldi making 17.
It's a goofy team.
You know what? If this ends up working out, you better get put on the radio for like the insanity of this mind. Because I'm trying to it's starting to make a little bit more sense. Like, I get what you're saying, because if you lose Evaldi, then you're screwed. You're really screwed. So I get what you're saying about the longevity and the reality of the situation regarding his arm, the fact that he may not survive a full season if he gets any form of injury, because we've already seen what happens. And that would detrimentally put our entire staff in harm's way, because then you're going to try to picture your starting rotation getting 5 or 6 innings every start, and that's just not happening. You're not going to be getting 6 innings a start.
If he stays in the rotation, he needs to make it to Chris Sale at a minimum. And then
I agree.
And then we get Sale back. I agree. But this is also predicated on Nick Pivetta pitching well. He's never had a great season, so he's got to be pitching well. So there's a lot of scenarios that could prevent Eovaldi from being utilized that way, from actually happening. But if everybody's pitching okay, I mean, I just think that's a way to save Eovaldi, get Houck in the rotation, and everybody's happy. Is there a 50% chance that this happens? No. It's probably a 10 or 20% chance, if even that. But like I said, you got to make the pieces fit somehow. Job, any more thoughts on this?
I mean, I think if you were to use the team most effectively, then you're probably using Eovaldi in the bullpen. If Houck is good, who knows? But I don't think Cora would do that to a veteran player. And I don't think that Chaim Bloom has the ability to tell Cora not to do that. So I just don't see it happening. Now, if we make it to October in some kind of dream scenario, then that happens to every team. They go to a four-man rotation and somebody slots into the bullpen. I mean, I could think of Eovaldi is dominant for four innings. We saw it last year. He was great for five innings, and then in the sixth inning, the wheels fall off every time. So I could see it happening. I'd like to, you can't get rid of his contract, so I'd like to extend it a little bit as far as I'd like to make him be useful. But I don't know, that Cora will do that to him. I doubt it.
Well, he's already got his money, so I don't know.
But what I mean is, you can't move his contract, right? You can't trade him at any point during the season because you need him, and he's getting paid way too much money to not be used. And I don't think Cora would ever move a pitcher who's pitching somewhat well, because I think he'll always pitch somewhat well, or at least better than the back half of the rotation. Because I don't think that Richards is good, and I have my concerns about Pivetta. I don't think he'll ever move somebody like that to the bullpen unless he has to. So I just don't think it's going to happen. But if it did happen, I would not be upset.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think we can all agree it is a low percentage scenario. So anything going on as far as the offense goes? I know Dahlbeck, every hit's a home run, and that's obviously going to be so sustainable. He's going to hit 120 home runs this year. Another thing, let's talk about this guy real quick. Michael Chavis has made comments this week, seems to be very understanding of his situation. He's being real about it. He knows he's probably not going to be with the big club to start the year. He is tied for second with hits right now. Only has, four strikeouts in 18 at-bats. That's not, super great. But he's hitting at a .333 clip right now. And I feel bad for the guy.
I do too. I just think that he knows that no matter what he was going to do, it was going to be tough to win a job. And the signing of Santana really, he's going to AAA, unfortunately, mostly because some of the other guys that are either equal to him in terms of ability are out of options. So he's kind of screwed in that sense. He's definitely going to go down to AAA. But if he tears the cover off the ball, he'll be back up with the club. I don't doubt it, and I wouldn't be surprised if we add a fourth bench player and remove a pitcher as injuries happen, so I wouldn't be surprised if that changes. But for now, that's kind of how things are going to play out. Charlie, what are your thoughts?
Michael Chavis still has two options left, and everyone keeps forgetting that it's the Red Sox. Anybody could go down at any moment, and Michael Chavis will be waiting with his cape on to strike out and bless us with a home run. From time to time, it happens. Here's the thing. the past couple of years, he did not strike out a lot at the beginning of the year, and then pitchers kind of caught on to him. This is spring training. He's already striking out 22% of the time. 4 strikeouts, 18 at-bats, 22.2%. That number will go up when he's facing major league pitching the whole time. There's no question. We know what we're getting. We're getting someone who strikes out between 30 and 36% of the time.
He just can't identify the high fastball.
There are certain pitches that he can hit, and there are certain pitches that he can't. I don't believe he made a cameo in trouble with the curve. But if he did, there would be one pitch that he could hit and one pitch that he can't. There are some players that have really good plate awareness. That man is not one of them. I will forever be in Michael Chavis's corner because I was there when I saw him launch his first one, and I was going down to grab popcorn, and I'm there live on ESPN, and I was all for it. But you know what? I'm not too worried about Michael Chavis, because if we send him down to Pawtucket to kind of figure out some things and he's still struggling in Pawtucket, then are we really feeling bad because he couldn't even hack it in Pawtucket? I want him to succeed. I really do. I'm in his corner. He's trying. He wants to get it. But the fact that he's taking ownership, as Terry mentioned, he understands what's happening, and he sees this all going on. I give him a lot more credit, and I would tip my cap to him. He's not whining about it. He recognizes what's happening.
Yeah,
the opportunity will come back.
He's not being a diva at all. And
not at all.
The interesting thing here
is... He's trying to win himself a job.
Yeah, I mean,
he can't be a diva because he's not good enough.
That's
the reality of it.
He's putting his best foot forward. Now, let's consider this scenario. If he does go down to Pawtucket, where is he playing? Because our outfield right now, pretty thin. You got Cordero, who we don't know what to make of him from a performance standpoint, from a health standpoint, and he's not even not expected to make the team right away. He'll start on the DL or whatever because of his COVID situation. He's just too far behind, basically. And then you got Renfro, who is a DFA by June candidate if he doesn't get off on the right foot. So do you put Chavis in the outfield, or do you just kind of keep him at first and second in Worcester?
I think he splits his time between first and second base. There's a decent chance that one of those guys, specifically Dahlbeck, does not work out. If Dahlbeck does not work out and Chavis is tearing the cover off the ball, they can make a switch there very easily. I don't think this is Dahlbeck's here for good. But then again, Dahlbeck is the prototype of what they now want in the league, which is strikeout or home run, and he's better at it than Chavis. So I don't necessarily think he'll be sent down. That's the clearest path to playing time in my mind for Michael Chavis. Unless some of these, platoon guys that they brought up, these super utility guys, can't hack it at second base, then he could play second base. But he really has an uphill battle to do that because there's a lot of guys in front of him with no options, and there's a lot of guys in front of him that are getting paid. So I don't see him with the big league club playing second base unless some freaky accident happens or, Chaim Bloom gets fired. Yeah. That's pretty much it. Those are the options. I just don't see him at second base for the Red Sox. I could see him playing first base, and I could also see, at some point in the future, Rafael Devers playing first base and we need a third baseman. That wouldn't bother me either. But I don't think Chavis is that guy.
The Devers thing has been
a
long debate on this podcast, but I think he's probably going to be there for the duration of the season. Here's another thing to consider. We're kind of touching on the fact that Dahlbeck could have a short leash and could get optioned. Another guy who's under immense pressure is a guy I've kind of advocated for all winter, Christian Arroyo. If he gets off to a bad start, he's also a DFA by May or June candidate because he has no options. So he's under a ton of pressure as well.
And he's a Rule 5 guy from last season who spent most of the season with the big league club and didn't show enough to win a job, obviously, because they went out and they didn't have confidence in him. So they went out and signed three different guys to play his position. So he could get DFA'd pretty easily, I think. And he might even be already on the short list, so to speak, for if they need to bring up Chavis, who do we cut? They might already have that in their head.
It's definitely a scenario.
Christian Arroyo doesn't do it for me. Like, I know it's a super, super small sample size, and we got him from Cleveland. I like him, but I don't love him. And I think I could
love him if he played. He doesn't play.
He doesn't play. He doesn't strike out as much, which is cute and adorable, because that's nice to see someone who doesn't strike out all the time. The power numbers aren't there. He doesn't steal any bases. He plays second and short, which we already have a plethora of other players that can do that. What does Christian Arroyo bring to the table that Chavis or Dahlbeck doesn't? He doesn't strike out as much as Chavis. He doesn't hit as many home runs as Dahlbeck. But Chavis still hits more home runs.
He's better defensively than both of those guys.
He is.
But are you going to put Christian Arroyo into short over Xander? No. Are you going to put Christian Arroyo in over Kiki Hernandez if he's playing second base, or Michael Chavis at second base?
No, but our depth at shortstop is pretty low after Xander, and he's already dealing with a shoulder injury. So, you know, unless you want Marwin Gonzalez and Kiki Hernandez both playing every day, I think there's a path there for Arroyo to get some decent playing time at short.
I just don't see it for Arroyo, unfortunately. It's like Brock Holt's backup. It's like, oh yeah, everyone knows who you are, but 18 at bats a season. Like, it's just, I don't see him getting that much, because Marwin Gonzalez and Kiki Hernandez are going to be playing a boatload of those games and getting a boatload of those innings. And if Xander goes back 100%, you don't have to worry about short. Okay, cool. Well, we have an off day. Well, we can put, you know, Kiki in there, or Marwin Gonzalez in there, or in the very likely event, Chavis. Dahlbeck's not going to play short, and Chavis is going to play short. I just don't see it for Christian Arroyo.
So you see Arroyo getting DFA'd and Chavis coming up?
I think the Red Sox right now are prioritizing Dahlbeck over Chavis, and not because he's older, but because, like you mentioned, like the model of the baseball player that teams want right now, they want boom or bust players. That's why someone like Gary Sanchez, who plays for the Yankees and it's under 200, is still playing Major League Baseball. Why? Because he can still mash. And if he couldn't hit 30 home runs a season, he would not be playing AAA baseball. That's it. That's just it. Christian Arroyo does not mash home runs. Christian Arroyo does not strike out that much. Christian Arroyo does not have the wow factor. Bobby Dahlbeck has a chance to have the wow factor. Michael Chavis has the chance to have the wow factor. And you know what? I will happily eat my words. I don't think he's going to pull a Jose Bautista and then just all of a sudden hit 54 bombs in one season.
I don't want him to. I'd much rather have the guy that hits doubles. But
he doesn't even do that.
Major League ball players disagree with me. You know, so
50 at-bats, one double. That's 2%.
He's never
had anything in 15 at-bats. I mean, Pedroia's hit like, you know, what, 120 through his first 100 at-bats. I mean, that's not indicative at somebody who's a Rule 5 guy. It's not like, oh, this is a guy who's played a lot, we know what he is, and he has 15 at-bats, and this is the standard. He's a Rule 5 guy no one's ever seen. Who knows?
Okay, we're going to talk about the standard. We'll talk about the standard for a second. 2018, 53 at-bats. 2019, 50 at-bats. 2020, 50 at-bats.
So here's the question. Is it worth cutting him and bringing up Michael Chavis if there's only 50 at-bats to find for him? I doubt it. I'd rather have Chavis sitting in AAA and mashing.
Okay, put Chavis to AAA. Bring Christian Arroyo up because, I mean, this season is, you know, 2020 2.0. Bring Christian Arroyo in there. Let's see what he does for a month. Let's see what he does for a month and a half. And then by mid-May,
he swings for it, though. You know, if he's only getting, you know, one start a week, only getting 2-3 at bats a week, are you really going to see something that you dislike all that much?
If Xander really is not as healthy as he says he is, and Xander ends up somehow working his way into DH games because he can't throw, he can't field the position, and Christian Arroyo starts getting opportunities, if just to prove your point, put Christian Arroyo in there, and it's like having another Christian Vasquez in the lineup. You're just not going to get pop. He'll come up. He might sit down by way of the K, but he's probably going to ground out, pop out. He's not going to get doubles. He's not going to get home runs. He's only had one career triple in 530 at-bats. Or sorry, excuse me, 278 at-bats. I mean,
that's half a season. You know, I mean, that's not enough at-bats for me to be telling you that he's going to be the guy. It's also not enough at-bats for me to tell you that he sucks. I know Terry likes him. I like him too. Terry, what are your thoughts about the easiest way for Chavis to make, you know, the big league club?
Well, I was just going to mention how good Marwin Gonzalez has looked. He's like, I think 5-for-18, 6-for-18, something like that. Hit a couple of dingers. So it's a team.
He looked great today. He had two today.
Okay. So I couldn't remember if it was today or yesterday. So he's another guy that's going to complicate Arroyo and Chavis because I feel like he's more of an infielder and he could be, if Dalbec doesn't work out, Gonzalez could very well be the first baseman. If he's the hot hand and they have to keep him in the lineup, he could play second as well. And then I think Hernandez, I keep saying this and I could be wrong, but I really think Hernandez is going to play in the outfield more than anything this year. I really believe
that.
You
and I very much disagree on that. I think he's our second baseman every day until he can't do it.
With that,
offensively.
At that point, so then Arroyo's out.
I'd be interested to see if he can play outfield. That's how I look at it. I think Kike Hernandez is going to start at second base, and he's going to play second base for 90 to 100 games. They're not paying him to be a utility infielder. That's why he's here.
Okay.
He could have gone any of 100 places for a utility infield spot. He could have stayed in L.A. and won potentially another ring with the Dodgers if he was going to play utility infield. They told him he's going to be a starter. He's already said as much.
So this is the thing about Kike Hernandez. Kike Hernandez didn't play more than, you know, obviously a crazy season, did not play a majority of his games at any other position other than second base. He played 30 games at second base. He played 17 in the outfield, 9 in right, 5 in left, 3 in center. He has the ability to play any position, to both of your points. Majority of his starts, though, have come at second base, which again says we're not seeing Chavis. We're not going to see Dalbec because he doesn't play. He plays the corners. And you'd put him in over Arroyo. Why? Because he's a better player than Arroyo. He can hit. He can get on base. He can do more work. To Terry's point, yeah, he's your potential fourth or third outfielder. So this is, again, one of those points where I don't find myself being negative, which is the second majority. I don't find myself being incredibly positive. I see him being 50-50. I see him being able to do, literally, in a four-game span, 2 games at second base, 2 games playing center right. You know, like, we don't know. It's still too early to tell.
You know, I think you're right. We don't know. But the reason that I think we don't know is I don't know what our outfield's going to look like. I think two of the outfielders that we signed to be, you know, everyday outfielders, I haven't seen anything from them, Cordero or Renfroe. I have no idea what they're going to be. And, you know, I think Renfroe is another one of those boom or bust guys that the GMs love and that the fans hate. But it's going to be stressful, I think, as a fan to, you know, pencil in an everyday lineup card for this team.
Okay, so Cordero's not going to make the team right away because, like I said, he's behind. So he's going to miss a week or two. Your only two outfielders right now are Verdugo and Renfroe. So Hernandez is going in the outfield. Who's your next best option for the first couple of weeks?
So here's my thinking. The first couple of weeks, I think, unfortunately, you're probably going to see J.D. Martinez playing the outfield.
Oof,
I don't say that with any love. I say that because I don't think Xander Bogaerts is ready.
Nope.
To play shortstop.
No. No. J.D. Martinez in the outfield, that's like asking someone – that's like asking you or me to go man the outfield with beer goggles on. That's dangerous. You're playing with fire.
My beer goggles are great, Charlie.
Mine are trash. It's like Matt Hall bad. 2018, Kike Hernandez did play the most games in center field. Marwin Gonzalez can also play in the outfield. So looking at his by-game line, he played a lot of games at third, a lot of games at second. In 2019, the most games that he played were in right field.
Really?
Wow. So he played in 2019. It says here that there were 59 games played, 59 games manning the outfield, 44 manning right field. So unless something is completely off on that, played 114 games. Yeah. So very possible that he ended up, you know.
So he could be in the outfield. Just running. Then. I thought he was a lot more limited.
I don't think he's limited at all. I think it's just Xander Bogaerts is going to be ready either. Right. I think you're going to see a very shaky start from a health perspective for this team.
Charlie, you froze.
JD Bogaerts Martinez could play in outfield. It won't be every day.
That's only for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's only 10 games.
I'm just going to say this right now. Either Renfro or Cordero is going to wind up being the fourth outfielder. I don't think for the bulk of the season they're both going to be in the lineup together very much. And I was unaware that Gonzalez has had that much time in the outfield. I thought, like I said, his outfield time was far more limited, less than 20 games a season. And so maybe he's a left fielder then. And at that point, maybe he is the first one in the outfield. And then Hernandez does play second.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, to Charlie's point, I think we have a lot of guys who can play the position. I want to be very upset if all of these career utility guys find themselves in the lineup every day. That's how I look at it. And I understand we're going to carry a three-man bench, one of whom is Kevin Plawecki. So we're going to have two guys, and a lot of these guys are going to find time to play. But if our starting lineup come opening day is a bunch of platoon guys around Xander Bogaerts in the middle of the lineup, I'm going to be kind of upset. Because I think that this team offensively has the potential to put out some really good numbers, and I don't want to cite spring training numbers because they're meaningless, but even last year, this team could hit. They just couldn't pitch. They couldn't field. We probably still can't field. I know Alex Cora has been talking about how he wants good fielding from this team, and that's something they sucked at last year. He's trying to emphasize that in camp. They're making errors left and right in spring training, so hopefully they work that out. I don't want to see this team place the emphasis on defense and home runs and not pitching and or putting your best players out there. I don't care about versatility as much as I care about having good players at their positions. So if Marwin Gonzalez is playing right field, okay. I'm not going to hate on it because right now he's playing well, and he's played pretty well in his career in short stints. But if he turns out to be your everyday right fielder, I'm going to be upset. Pay somebody to play the position.
Well, this is the way I think we'll kind of agree on is this is a roster built on people stepping up. And there's a lot of incentive to step up because there's almost two guys that can take your place at any spot, whether it's the outfield or the infield in some type of alignment. So if Gonzalez isn't playing well, then, Arroyo is going to get the playing time or there's just the hot hand will always find its way in the lineup, I guess is what I'm saying.
I just feel like there's not enough good hitters in this lineup to be able to feed the hot hand. Put your best nine out there and let them play. I'm a big proponent of Kike Hernandez leading off and playing second base every single day. And if you have to slot Marwin Gonzalez in as your fourth outfielder, I'm okay with that. Or as your utility guy, I'm great with that. But we're pretty thin. If we have an injury with three-man bench, you're pretty thin. That's why these guys are all utility guys, because they know that the talent level's not there to, sustain a lot of injuries. But guys need to be able to play multiple positions because the guys aren't good behind them.
I think let me simplify what I was saying. There's two guys to replace Marwin Gonzalez. There's two guys to replace Christian Arroyo. There's two guys to replace Franchi Cordero. There's just infinite amounts of different alignments. So if people want to play, they're gonna have to earn it.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I think about Alex Cora that we've seen that maybe is not his strong suit is managing to get enough at-bats for everybody. The one thing that he's always done is made sure that his veterans get what they think they need to play. And I don't think it's any I mean, I know we talked a lot about the video room and all of that. I don't think it's any kind of coincidence that JD Martinez had a far worse season with a new manager than he did with Alex Cora. Alex Cora is a manager who tells the veteran players, you do what you need to succeed, and I'm just going to put you in when I can. So I think some of these veteran players are going to be really happy to have him back, and they're going to maximize output. And some of these younger guys are going to end up playing far more than they should be, a la Bobby Delbecq. The one guy we don't have a backup first baseman, you know, who can play first base every day. Delbecq, he looked good defensively, but he strikes out far too much. I don't like Bobby Delbecq, in case anyone listening hasn't understood that yet.
I want to like him, but I don't think his all or nothing approach is going to translate very well. I think we're getting back to the contact hitting mentality, and the ball's going to be deadened anyway, so it's going to be a little bit harder to hit 35, 40 dingers a year at this point. So, but we'll see. I mean, I think Cora is going to try to – I think he's going to try to keep as many people happy as possible, but it's just we've never seen a roster like this, so – So it's going to be interesting one way or the other. There's just so many different scenarios in the rotation and in the lineup every day in the bullpen.
I think nothing is certain except the opening day roster. I think the opening day roster, barring injuries, has already been set. We mentioned the guys who are on the, you know, on the short list, unfortunately, to not make the roster are going to be Hauk and then Michael Chavis. But everything else is kind of up in the air. I already posted, you know, on Twitter, and I said it on the YouTube page, what I think my opening day lineup is going to be. That's going to change because Cordero's not going to be ready, and I had him penciled in to play right field. But there's going to be, I think, a lot of intangibles and a lot of changes. We're not going to see the same lineup very often until maybe June or July.
And even then, I mean, what if Duran is hitting the cover off the ball, or I think Casas?
No, please, I mean, I want them to hit the cover off the ball, but this is going to be – we're going to be talking about this with Andrew for the next 6 months on the show, is whether the young guys are good or whether they're just hitting a triple A. Like, I don't know what your thoughts are. Charlie, I know you and I typically agree on, you know, a prospect is a lottery ticket, but would you bring up a Duran at this point? You know, if he's ready in June?
No. No. Why start the clock on this kid now? I mean, this is the potential future guy. I just think, yeah, you could bring him up and you burn a year, and we can sit here and pretend like the Red Sox and all major league teams aren't going to do something like that. But I don't think he's ready yet. Like, he's mashing it against not well-known talent. I think that bringing him up now would just be a little bit silly. I say maybe a year, 2022. Sure, let's do it. Let's run it. Let's run the boys. Let's go. Bring out a bunch of rookies. Why not?
I just mentioned that as, you know, just it's going to get talked about if he is hitting the cover off the ball. But like you guys are saying, why start the clock? And we do have a roster full of super utility guys, so it's makes it even harder to justify. But we are going to nix the rules changes in the minors, you know, with the shift and whatnot. That's a pretty deep topic, and I don't want to rush through it, so we'll probably save it for the next show at this point. But any final thoughts as we wrap?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I ended up having a really good interaction with one of our fans on Twitter that I ended up not mentioning last time, and I forgot to, so I didn't tell him I was going to shout him out, but for Doug, I'm shouting you out, sir. I appreciate our conversation. I thought that was awesome. You know, for our fans that are listening, man, you guys have questions, you got some concerns, you have some issues, you're upset with something that Andrew said, just kidding. If you're upset with anything that I said or Terry said or Job or anybody, like, let us know. Like, I love the feedback. I love talking with you guys. I have so much fun interacting with you. I've personally made a lot of Twitter friends with people who are not necessarily Red Sox fans, and that's totally cool. Like, we bond over one thing. We bond over baseball. At the end of the day, we're all human beings. So I appreciate it. And Doug, thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
Deb, you kind of stole my thunder, Charlie. I was going to say, after last show, I made the mistake of mentioning Charlie Morton as a left-handed pitcher, which is a typo, on, you know, a mistake on my part. And I was called out on Twitter by one of our listeners as well. And we went back and forth about the lineup, and we had like a 25-minute conversation between me and three or four other people on that thread. That's, I love to hear that. You know, I love the feedback. It keeps me on my toes. And as we get into the season, I love seeing people engage. It's going to be a long 3 weeks, I think, as we wait for opening day. But I'm excited to hopefully get on here a couple more times as we get closer. And then at the end of every other series.
And hold us accountable. Anyone in the audience, I think we're all capable of owning up to it, as Job has, as I will, dozens of times in the coming seasons. But we do definitely do appreciate the interaction. Write us a review on iTunes as well, if that's what you listen on, because that helps immensely. It makes us a lot more visible. And we are very visible. I don't know if how many of you might have heard the last show, but I did open the show kind of thanking everybody, and I'm basically doing that again right now. We do appreciate your listenership, the interactions, and you know, we're all pretty accessible on Twitter anyway, so especially Charlie.
But
yeah. So for the listening audience, we will probably be back on Sunday night to discuss probably why we hate Garrett Richards even more and whatever other issues crop up throughout the week. Hopefully good issues, but we will cover...
Can we get a Garrett Richards like theme song outro for like... I'm going to get a track going. For all the times Garrett Richards like gives up a home run, I'm going to keep track of it. I'm going to make a nice long outro segment for the end of the season. At the end of the season, we're going to have a nice long episode where it's just listening to Garrett Richards cough up home runs. It's going to be fun.
Get with Brad on that, and we will whip something up. So for the listening audience, we'll see you at the end of the weekend. Take care.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.